Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by McCorney Marja. Let's get into the first news story of today. And this is about the new mining bill, which the Minister of Mining, Gwede Mantashe, is very eager to push through. It is going to spell doom for the South African mining sector, as far as I'm concerned. Now, I'm going to read from the DA's statement on this, which comes from, full disclosure, my father, who is the DA spokesperson on mining. But I think it nicely sums up many of the issues with this piece of legislation. The new Mineral Resources Bill, which was unveiled for public comment last week, says James Lorimer of the DA, will effectively end the already tottering case for foreign investment in South African mining. The bill seeks to double down on racial transformation and brings back a legion of bad ideas that were dismissed in the courts in the struggle over the last version of the mining charter. The bill is poorly thought out, it is contradictory and unclear in several places. It grants new powers to the minister to rule the industry according to his own whim. Other notable problems include a restriction of certain licenses to black people only, which appears to be unconstitutional. The ministerial approval will now be required for the change of control of any listed company holding a mining license, even if the change of control of the South African company occurs indirectly on a non-South African stock exchange. A vague requirement that certain minerals would have to be made available for local beneficiation. It does not say who will do the beneficiation or at what price mines would have to make the minerals available. Uneconomic mines would have to keep paying out for their social and labor plans, even while on care and maintenance and generating no income. One of the most egregious provisions would be to redefine mine dumps, which at the moment a mine can process, basically turning old mine wastage into resources, but now would make these subject to race and requirements. And also it entrenches, it overturns the idea of once empowered, always empowered. This is the provision that if you give away a certain percentage of your company to historically disadvantaged peoples, that then counts forever, even if those people then sell their shares, say, to a white investor or to a foreign company or something that doesn't count as disadvantaged. You don't have to continuously give away equity from your company until it reaches 30% ownership or whatever the requirements are of legislation. McCorney, it's sort of insane, actually, that all of these ideas which the mining industry has been screaming about for ages now, and you know, it's not like this is all a theoretical thing. It's not like this is all just whinging. We've seen huge job losses in the mining industry. We've seen effectively the growth in the mining industry largely stop. The whole thing is on life support. And now the minister wants to triple down on every bad idea he's had in the last 10 years. I don't know. What's your take on this?
Nick, let's not also forget that this comes on the back of an ever-declining CapEx expenditure in South Africa. You know, the gross fixed capital formation has been taking a hit due to some of those economic constraints, which have severely impacted the mining industry, like Eskom's load shedding over the last couple of years. And yes, we are on a recovery. But the mining, you would think the government would provide incentives rather than attempting to clamp down on the mining industry's ability to operate, create jobs in the process, attract investment and so forth. This also comes, again, as Transnet itself is seemingly recovering from its previous impediments, which, again, the mining industry felt fully, experienced fully, in that it hampered their ability to rail and haul goods throughout the country to ports so that exports can take place. And again, to add to that, the unemployment rate, it's frightening to observe that even when everything has gone declined so rampantly in terms of economic performance, particularly of the mining industry, the government seeks to tighten its grip and suffocated even more through bureaucratic means, through red tape. And this is just one of them. I mean, we've experienced in the last few years South African companies fleeing the South African listing and opting instead to have themselves listed on the New York Stock Exchange, on the London Stock Exchange, because doing business in South Africa has just become so hostile. And even I had a look at companies that are listed abroad, and it the search provided that several South African mining companies have listings on international stock exchanges. Notable examples include Anglo Ashanti Gold Fields, Sibanye-Stillwater, Harmony Gold. One of the companies that have recently acquired a listing abroad on the London Stock Foreign Exchange is the Rare Earth Minerals that the president was alluding to in his speech, in his conversation with US President Donald Trump about, you know, the 17 rare minerals in South Africa that will soon be explored, and we want to attract American foreign direct investment. And yet we're doing everything but we seek instead to chase these companies and have them do business elsewhere rather than here in South Africa. So it's frightening reading this. I don't think that Gwede Mantashe or any of his successors should effectively serve as another person on a board of a privately owned company in South Africa. And that's what this is, right? The government seeks to create space for itself in the running and in the operations of South African companies, whether it's through this act that targets the mining industry or things like the employment equity, right? It's this idea that in a decision at a private company, in decision-making that takes place by private companies, the government will have a significant influence on the outcome of those decisions by force. And now the government has given the Minister of Minerals the ability to veto board appointment decisions. If you also take into consideration that many of South African state-owned entities go without a full board for years, right? They can operate without a board because ministers take forever to come to a decision. Just consider the impact that this is going to have on those privately listed mining companies now, that they'll be waiting for months, if not years, for the minerals minister to assist in completing the decision of appointing a board. It's senseless. It vastly expands the powers of the minister beyond what is reasonable or necessary. It's terrifying.
So, of course, I suspect much of the response to this criticism we're laying on the bill will be to say, oh, well, you know, you're just protecting the interests of, you're just speaking up for the mining industry. You only care about these rich fat cat businessmen. But quite frankly, this is not going to hurt those business people who will take their business other places. If you're the kind of person who's playing at this level in mining, to be worried about this, you probably have options overseas where you can go mine. You can go mine in Australia. You can go mine somewhere else in Africa. There are many places in the world with these minerals that are not South Africa. Who this is really going to hurt are those mining towns which rely on a mine that is already not in great shape for all of their economic activity. This is going to hurt miners who are using this as an income source to feed sometimes 10 people and their extended family, if not more. This is a calamity for those people because these mines and the investment will dry up, it will go somewhere else, and those people will be left with their developed skills from years of working in mines, unable to look after their families, those companies will not be paying tax into the fiscus, which also then hurts our ability to, you know, give out social services. So that is who's really being screwed here in order to enhance the government's control over the mining sector and to hand out patronage to its allies. Awful stuff. All right, let's do some political analysis. In Sutherland, which is a town I very much love to go on holiday to in the Northern Cape, the coldest town in South Africa, I believe it is, still holds the record of being, but there was a by-election there recently where the Patriotic Alliance has managed to grow its vote numbers quite significantly to take the ward from the ANC. Now, whenever you're talking about by-elections in the Northern Cape, you're almost always talking about relatively small numbers of voters. In the 2021 local government election, the ANC beat the Patriotic Alliance by 68 votes. This time, the Patriotic Alliance beat the ANC by 24 votes, which was actually a significant percentage swing. The DA came third with about 10% of the vote, and the Freedom Front Plus with about 2% of the vote. This was because the PA managed to The reason this by-election happened was because the PA managed to recruit the ANC candidate in this ward to switch over to the PA. She then stood as the PA's candidate for her old seat and managed to win because of that. This puts the municipality in which this ward sits back into coalition territory. The ANC was governing it outright after winning a ward recently, but now is going to have to probably make a coalition deal with the PA in order to retain control of this municipality. So Northern Cape is an interesting place in South African politics. It's often has trends and things going on in it that are kind of contrary to the rest of the country. It's got like a very unique dynamic to it. But I think the PA might have a lot of room to grow at the ANC's expense in the Northern Cape. What do you make of this, Mukwana?
Yeah, I'm bemused by the Patriotic Alliance. I think they've carved a very interesting niche for themselves in South African politics, in that they're able to collect voters or defectors from the ANC and the Democratic Alliance alike. And they're also one of the first, if not the first, political party prior to the Government of National Unity and when it was still not popular, to say, we will go in coalition with anybody, including AWB, if they still existed. Essentially, we want power because power allows us to effect service delivery, and only through political power can we represent our constituency effectively. And soon thereafter, other parties followed, parties that had said that they would never go into coalition with the ANC, like Action SA, like the DA. And so they had, in addition to that niche that I was speaking about, they're also just outwardly not non-democratic. They're run like a church. You know, their leaders are appointed. And Gayton McKenzie speaks very proudly about this. So one of the things I wanted to point out as well is their performance in by-elections has been stellar since 2021, when we had our last local government elections. And I was referring to you, Nick, pre the filming, to Marius Ruetz, our colleague's post on LinkedIn about a month ago. He provided statistics on the performances of different all political parties in local government by-elections since 2021. And the best performing party there at the time was the IFP with 21, essentially get a net gain of 21 by-elections. And second to that was the PA with 9. But again, this was a month ago, so I'm not adjusting for any changes that have taken place since. But still, there's quite a gap between the first best performing political party, the second, which is the Patriotic Alliance, and the rest. So I doubt that the others have managed to catch up, at least with the IFP, let alone the Patriotic Alliance. So they are performing quite well at the local government elections level. And in the Northern Cape, which is largely neglected in South African politics, it's one of those we don't see it, we don't speak about it at all. But it seems, again, the Patriotic Alliance persists with identifying interesting neglected pockets that others saw that more established political parties are not addressing, and then filling in those gaps. So it's interesting now going into the next local government election, how they will perform then.
No, it's going to be very interesting to watch. One of the, I think, interesting new developments will be the PA sort of capturing wards all over the Western and Northern Cape. Okay. Let us move on to our last story here. And we talked earlier this week about the changes that the DA Minister of Communications, Solly Malatsi, is making to make it slightly easier for foreign internet companies to invest in South Africa by changing the way the BEE requirements work. The MK party immediately aggressively pushed back against that. But now we're also seeing some pushback from the ANC, who is, of course, in coalition with the DA. So it's just as a side note, I know the ANC complained about the DA taking legislation to court. I see now the ANC sort of not saying they're going to take the minister's changes to court, but are basically saying, well, someone will, so anyway, it's just kind of funny how that standard didn't seem to last very long. But anyway, the ANC has, quote, urged caution as the communications minister has proceeded with this policy directive, they say that there are jobs on the line because there's already established players in the internet space here, and that any new entrant needs to be essentially guided by fairness and competition rules in order to make sure that their entry into the market is not too disruptive for the companies that are already on there. Now, McCorner, this is just so typical of how we respond to investment in this country is, you know, we get a positive change, things start to move forward, we look like we're going to get some new foreign investment, and then immediately the ANC runs up to, you know, take control of the thing, and they say, oh, well, you know, competition this, investment this, we need to make this sure everything is fair, and basically we need to guide the process and make sure we get our cut. McCorner, your thoughts?
So this is another sticky one. Obviously, investment is critical, and leveling of the playing field is important too. I am worried about, you know, giving Starlink this advantage, but I'm not also saying that we should introduce these BEE laws by any means. I think we should do away with BEE. But let's make it fair and apply that principle across the board. Let's do away with these EEIP requirements, because it is true that Starlink is afforded, you know, a greater advantage in this space. And we had actually written to Minister Malatsi a month ago, I think, or two, it was in March, where we were campaigning against the cost of jobs and investment that BEE presents on the South African economy, on the unemployed people in South Africa. So this, what the ANC is speaking about, this idea that jobs will be on the line, no, jobs will be created, because there will be one other company in South Africa that'll have to build its own infrastructure, and that means that people will need to fill up those positions. So no, this is this thinking of the economy as this pie that is cut up, you know, amongst different players. That's just not how it works. It's that zero-sum mentality prevailing again. It also shows you that our public representatives don't necessarily understand business, and that would explain all the hostility towards more businesses coming to operate in South Africa. But I think this would be a huge improvement for foreign companies in South Africa to be able to come, and for laws to be amended to enable that. But I do think that in leveling the playing field, it shouldn't be increasing restrictions or increasing bureaucracy. It should be in erasing it for everyone across the board. And that's how we would, again, make things fair, not by ratcheting up the laws, but by cutting them entirely so that everyone can compete on an equal playing field.
Yeah, no, difficult for me to disagree with that one. All right, I think that is all the time we have for today. Thank you very much for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we will keep on speaking for a prosperous and free South Africa. And I think the tide is turning. So, you know, it's all doom and gloom at the moment, but I think political forces are shifting in our country in complicated and interesting ways. And I think for the better. Remains to be seen, but we'll see. Okay, thank you very much, everyone, for listening. We'll see you all tomorrow on The Daily Friend Show. Cheers.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.